You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin. And this week's deep dive is on genetics, DNA testing, profiles, and our privacy, because we have some protections in place, but we also have some loopholes there, and we also have some looming issues. Now, we know that, you know, a lot of people have been doing genetic tests to find out about their history and medical conditions or possible genetic markers and all that. And so there are organizations like Ancestry.com and 23andMe and others that will gladly send you a kit. You know, you pay $50 to $100, whatever it is. You know, you swab your cheek or you spit into a cup and then you send it to them and they will give you your complete genetic profile. But what a lot of people don't necessarily realize is that when they are doing these things, they are giving up a lot of rights. And before we dive into, let's say, 23andMe, which is one of the topics we're going to be talking about today, we need to understand right now where the law is in terms of protecting us and our privacy for this. Now, in 2008, under the George W. Bush administration, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, or GINA, was passed. Now, GINA was hailed as a major civil rights bill, very forward-thinking, because at that time, DNA and genetic testing was pretty much in its infancy. It wasn't as ubiquitous as it is today. And so this is the backdrop. Basically, this says that somebody cannot, or an organization cannot, discriminate you based on your genetic profile. So, for example, if you have markers for, you know, one thing or the other, they really can't go after you for this. Health insurance providers can't deny you coverage and all of this. But there are loopholes regarding this, and it's very, very fascinating. And as I was doing research in this, I was actually surprised to see just all the various ways that an insurance company could get around this. But before we get into that, we want to talk about the crux of this situation right now. So 23andMe has millions and millions of DNA profiles because millions and millions of people have used 23andMe to do genetic profiles to find relatives long lost or otherwise, to, you know, to look up their health stuff like I was talking about before. But what a lot of people don't realize is that when 23andMe was basically formed, one of the major contributors or funding aspects of this was a major pharmaceuticals corporation called GlaxoSmithKline. They actually invested $300 million into this. And it was recently brought to light in the last few weeks that GlaxoSmithKline now has access to the millions of genetic and DNA profiles that are sitting in 23andMe. So basically, you have paid to give GlaxoSmithKline your DNA. Now, GlaxoSmithKline has come out and said they're going to use this information to try to build more effective drugs, therapies, medications, all of that. They're a pharmaceuticals corporation. And if they have a large swath of genetic data, which they can test, maybe they're able to detect things like, you know, pre-warning for cancer or whatever that is potentially good. But what they are opening up, obviously, is a can of privacy worms with this. And if they have access to our DNA and they know that you go there, then that's a serious problem. Not to mention the fact that if one of your relatives has actually, given them DNA, that your relative may have actually given them a good look into who you are as well. So if you have a sibling or a mother or a father or a child that has gone through this and done this, or even cousins, then they are starting to build a genetic profile on you, but around you with this. And the reason why I bring this up is because there was actually a very fascinating case in the last few months, in 2018, of a serial killer being caught in California through DNA. They had no idea who this serial killer was for decades. And so with the advent of genetic testing and profiling, they went to one of the public sites where a lot of researchers go, and they basically inputted this guy's DNA, and they were able to find relatives of him. They found actual matches, which then basically turned a cold case very warm, and they were able to go and, through his relatives, determine that the serial killer was, you know, whoever he was, and find it. And it was all done through genetic profiling because some of his relatives had gone and gotten their DNA tested, you know, for whatever purposes. And so that is what we are looking at. And so we would like to think that we are not going to see these companies take our genetic profiles and, you know, basically violate our privacy looking into this. So maybe I have, and I don't know this, I've never taken one of these genetic profiles. Again, privacy wonk here. But, you know, maybe I have, and maybe they see, oh, I have a higher susceptibility to cancer or, you know, something else. And so what ends up happening is they may end up wanting to raise my rates or something like this. Now, you're thinking to yourself, wait a second, like, you know, we have Gina in place. Gina is protecting us. They cannot discriminate against us with this. But there are some loopholes that have been found, and it's actually, you know, very fascinating. Since 2008, there has been a lot of research, a lot of publication, you know, in, you know, 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, you know, on loopholes that we're finding. We are finding innovative ways to get around this stuff in the same way that, you know, on an unrelated matter, law enforcement was able to track us in our via our cell phones, via GPS without needing a warrant because the law just didn't cover GPS. When the law was written for telecommunications and surveillance for the government, GPS wasn't really a thing that any of us had or had to worry about. So as we evolve our technology, as we evolve our product offerings, you know, through corporations and organizations, you know, the law doesn't necessarily keep up unless it's being shored up continuously. And so there was a report on ABC News, WHAM, ABC News in 2014, that Gina does not actually, while it tries to apply to health insurance providers, it does not apply to life, long-term care, or disability insurance. So for those policies, insurers can raise premiums or deny coverage based on a person's genetics. So if you have a higher susceptibility for cancer, even if you don't have cancer, and you go to get a disability insurance or long-term care or something like that, they can look at this and say, oh no, you're going to have cancer in, you know, 10 years, 20 years, whatever. We are not going to cover you, or you're going to pay significantly more. And again, this may not necessarily be the insurance provider, you know, of this having your genetic profile. They may look and say, oh, well, we've got your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, your cousin, and, you know, they all have this, or one of them has this, therefore you are now in a higher risk pool, you know, than anything else. And that is a serious, serious issue. You know, further, there has been reports. So NPR basically had one coming back a few years that was called Anonymity in Genetic Research Can Be Fleeting. And I'm going to quote from this, just a snapshot of this, because I think this is very telling as well. People who volunteer for medical research usually expect to remain anonymous. That includes people who donate their DNA for use in genetic studies. But now researchers have shown that in some cases they can trace research subjects' DNA back to them with ease, and they say the risk of being identified through their genetic information will only increase. Now that is from a few years ago. Another source is MedPage Today, which is a major publication in the medical industry, and Their article says no privacy guarantee for genomic data. And again, I'll read a snapshot of this as well. Supposedly anonymous individuals who have contributed their genetic information for research can sometimes be identified, through free publicly available internet tools, researchers found. And effort to find the full names of 10 participants in a Utah-based genomic study research project was successful for five of them, basically reporting the institute that researched this. In fact, the researchers said in a report on January 18th issue of Science, they were able to identify not only the participants, but their entire families, a total of nearly 50 people relying entirely on free publicly available resources. Now, these are some of the free resources that law enforcement used to find that serial killer, but when these reports came out, which was 2013, basically we did not have the 23s and me's. They were still in their infancy spinning up, or they just simply didn't exist. And so now combined with the genetic profiles that insurance companies and pharmaceutical corporations like GlaxoSmithKline have, combined with free research utilities that are obviously effective if they're catching serial killers or finding entire families as of 5 years ago, now they can start looking in the application process and say, oh, well, wait a second, you know, we technically don't have access to the data, but you know, we can kind of get access to the data, and now we assume you're in this risk pool, and so we're not denying you coverage because of this risk. We're denying you for whatever reason, you know, they'll make up, and that is one of the fears of this. And now, this is not like some tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist here. I mean, I've literally got articles from, you know, NPR, ABC News, you know, and finally here in the Atlantic. You know, if we're looking at this. In 2017, more recently, a bill was introduced into Congress to weaken GINA. Now, in 2017, HR or House Resolution 1313 says that parts of GINA do not apply to workplace wellness programs. These programs, originally promoted in the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, are meant to encourage a healthy lifestyle, and employees who participate may end up with lower premiums. If a company's wellness program includes genetic tests to identify health risks, as some are now starting to do, again, this is 2017, then employees who refuse the tests may pay hundreds or thousands more per year than their colleagues that have actually taken the test. And this is research and investigations done by The Atlantic. And so what we are seeing overall is a serious, serious issue to our privacy. And if you go up to anybody on the street and say, hey, do you want, you know, the government or organizations or other people to know intimate details about you, such as your genetic profile or, you know, how you message and communicate with your friends if it's online and all this, people are going to say, no, I don't want them to know that. Nobody is for weakening privacy. Yet here we have a House resolution in 2013 that has not been passed. It is working its way through Congress. It's been introduced, you know, to literally give your employer more information, thus causing a loophole in GINA. And because we can essentially get this information through, let's say, third parties or proxy means, then that technically opens up a legal loophole, you know, for insurance, health insurance providers to have your DNA profile without actually having your DNA profile, and therefore can discriminate against you. So they might not come to me and say, hey, Nick, you know, you have a higher susceptibility of cancer due to a genetic profile, since I've never taken a genetic profile. But maybe because they know my genetic profile matches, let's say, a specific demographic or percentage of the population, now they know, even without having my DNA, you know, that I am in a higher risk pool. And that is because they are able to use free, public, and now GlaxoSmithKline can just do it. They can go and research that and pretty much inference that I, let's say, have a higher susceptibility to cancer, which I hope I don't. I've never taken a DNA profile, nor do I want to, you know, because of this. But this is something that we all have to look out for. This is something that, you know, if we are looking at this, we are going to need stronger laws than what GINA has. I mean, GINA was passed a decade ago, literally a decade ago. And how much technological advancement have we had in a decade, you know, in terms of science, development, research, and corporations and organizations' abilities to effectively data mine us, essentially private to their own organizations. So, I mean, if we're looking outside of this, I mean, you know, back in 2010, you know, or 2008 rather, we didn't know about things like Cambridge Analytica that were, you know, deeply data mining us for, you know, building psychographic profiles on our social media and Facebook and all of this kind of stuff. And so what we don't necessarily know is basically what we don't know, which means GINA, the law that protects us from non-discrimination of our DNA, is not going to know that as well. And aha, now we have a loophole. And as we've already seen, there have already been existing loopholes right out of the gate, you know, with long-term disability and other things like that, as well as a push in Congress, you know, to weaken it further to allow our corporations, those that employ us, to have access to our genetic profiles so that they can adjust their risk pools accordingly. And what does that say? I mean, is the corporation at some point going to say, oh, he has a higher susceptibility or 100% chance of getting cancer, and I'm just going to keep using cancer here because nobody wants cancer. You know, oh, he's got a significantly higher rate of, you know, of susceptibility to getting cancer. So, you know what? Maybe we're going to find some way to let that person go. And there have been multiple cases of, you know, people being let go, terminating for cause or at will employment, in which case they don't even have to disclose it. If you live in an at will state, which I do in Illinois, you can be summarily fired and not given a reason for that. And if they find that out, you may not know that they have found that out, or maybe they found it out in a roundabout way. Researchers were able to find 50 relatives out of 5 people, using public search tools and all that for genetics and DNA. This is a serious, serious problem that we are going to have on the horizon, because we are basically creating a atmosphere of privacy or lack thereof in a new generation that is not thinking, twice about this stuff. What I see posted on social media anecdotally is, shocking. I mean, people use it as their personal therapy groups, not necessarily realizing, well, Facebook can now data mine that to advertise for you, against you and all that kind of stuff. And so that ends up being a serious problem. And, I just look at, the kids in my house as well. There's 2 kids, one's a tween and the other's a child. And, they're used to having cameras in their face all the day, all day long with, the phones and tablets and all this kind of stuff. It doesn't faze them. And so what we are seeing or what we are considering privacy may be entirely different than what we thought or considered privacy to be 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And that is continuing to change. And in many ways that actually benefits corporations, because if we are more willing to share deeply intimate things like our genetic profile with them, then they are more than happy to take it, data mine it, and do everything they can, including building psychographic profiles on us, for political elections, which is outside of DNA, but it's in the same vein. And so we need to make sure that we are continuously strengthening our laws. We can look at Europe that within the last year, actually the last 6 months or so, they've spun up what's called the GDPR, or General Data Protection Regulation. I believe that's what that stands for off the top of my head, that basically gives power back to the individual to say, hey, website, what do you have on me? What are you holding? And you have the right to remove your information from that and tell them not to data mine, which obviously flies in the face of a lot of business models. But it seems to me like we're going to need something like that, for our genetic profiles. I mean, if you are and you have taken 23andMe, and I've got listeners in multiple radio stations, and also some of you download this on SoundCloud, I guarantee you probably a healthy percentage of you guys have taken an Ancestry.com or a 23andMe. And if you've done 23andMe's testing, GlaxoSmithKline, the large pharmaceutical corporation, has your data. And while that may contribute to positive research in pharmacy, what else can they do with it? How can they sell it? What are their laws and what loopholes in this? Because we all know that we love to play lawyer ball, and if we're going to find a loophole, it will be exploited. So that is absolutely something to consider when we are talking about this. But this is a huge, huge problem that the world, I think, is now starting to wake up to. And I want to be on the forefront of this and just informing all of you guys that if you are taking this, you shouldn't be taking DNA tests right now, because we don't have solid laws that fully protect you. And it may not even matter to you anymore, because you might have had relatives that have taken DNA tests, which now put you on the radar as well. So keep that in mind as we are moving forward and we are trying to basically create a new definition for what privacy is. And that new definition should definitely include protecting our genetics to the nth degree, which quite frankly, the 2008 law simply does not. So take it for what it's worth. And this has been your Deep Dive of the Week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the tip of the week. And if you have an idea for a tip of the week, I am all ears. I'm more than happy to entertain anything. You can find me at Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP, or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com, and I'm more than happy to give you a shout out here for your tip of the week. Let's begin. And your tip of the week this week is actually on mobile phones. And I've been getting a lot of questions on this, so I want to give you guys the top 10 things that you can do to protect your mobile phone. So number 1, lock your device with a password. And obviously never leave it unattended in public, but use a password, not a PIN. And the reason being is that passwords are more aggressive, more secure, It's absolutely the better thing to do. PINs can be cracked rather easily. If you have a 4-digit PIN on your phone, you know, if we're brute forcing it, it'll take about 10, 12 hours to break into it. A 6-digit PIN, I think, takes a couple of months, assuming we can't find a vulnerability to get around it. But an actual password can take like a gajillion years to break. And so I would use probably a 10 or 11 character password with uppercase, lowercase letters, numbers, and special characters like exclamation points, question marks, etc. But then you can tie it to like a fingerprint to easily open your phone. It's not like you're going to be punching this thing in, but that will defend you. And so that is your number one tip. Number two, uninstall apps you don't use. People get app crazy, and these apps, they can sometimes have vulnerabilities you don't necessarily know about. They'll take up bandwidth as well as battery life as they're continuously phoning home to whatever cloud they are in to get telemetry and information and all that. So just uninstall them. If you don't need it, don't have it on your phone. Only download, number three is only download apps from trusted sources. So make sure that your apps are digitally signed. And there has been a slew of fake apps on, let's say, Google Play for Android that look like Disney games. One of them I actually did in a presentation, showed in a presentation. It was called the McQueen car racing game. And it looked exactly like a Disney game. But an actual Disney game is going to be digitally signed. The publisher is going to be Disney. So make sure you're only downloading from one legitimate stores like Google Play or the App Store for iPhone. But then also make sure that it is coming from a legitimate trusted source. Keep your phone updated. That is number four. That is so important. We patch for two reasons, and I've said this before. We patch for feature and enhancement updates, but we also patch for security. And if you are not patching your phone and you are ignoring those, you are leaving your phone vulnerable to hacking. Number five, install antivirus software. Now, this applies more to the Android side because there is no antivirus that you can install for an iPhone, but the one I recommend right now is Bitdefender for Android. And on the iPhone side, you can get what's called a web filter. That's pretty much the best thing you're going to be able to do because Apple, in their infinite wisdom, which I wholeheartedly disagree with, removed every antivirus program or app from the App Store in 2015, claiming that their sandboxing system for app development is so good you'll never need it, which has been proven broken multiple times right now. So that really sucks if you're an iPhone user. But install antivirus on your Android and install a web filter like Cisco Umbrella for iPhone. Number six, use your phone's Find Me feature to prevent loss or theft. So a lot of people don't realize it, but when you have an Android, you're signing up with a Google account. And if you have an Apple, you've got an Apple account. And if your phone gets lost or stolen, you can actually activate the phone to say, like, find my phone. And it will turn on the GPS through the cloud and let you know where your phone is. A lot of people don't know that. Ideally, with number seven, if you can cover at least your forward-facing phone, the forward-facing camera on your phone with some kind of sticker, and they make little nubs for this, then if somebody is able to hijack your phone, a lot of times what ends up happening is they're able to turn on the microphone, they're able to turn on the camera and all that. And so if you're covering the camera, then they're not going to be able to fire it up and actually record what's in front of them, which is probably going to be you. Number eight is backup your data. Both you know, Apple and Google have backups native to it. Just make sure it's turned on and running. If your phone dies or fails or is broken or is lost or stolen, you can then fire up another phone, log into your account, and restore a lot of your settings, and you're not going to lose anything from there. And if you're using apps like file sharing apps and stuff like that, those should be replicated into the cloud automatically, as is your email, but you definitely want to make sure that you're backing up your phones. Number nine, encrypt the data. So basically encrypt your phone. Now, if you have a solid password and new Android devices, like let's say within the last year or two, and iPhone for the last couple of years as well, if you have that solid password that I talked about in the number one option, you are already encrypted. If you have an older device, you should go ahead and encrypt the phone. If it's lost or stolen, then nobody can fire up the phone and copy your data out. They'd have to wipe the phone and blow it away in order to get that phone working. So that protects you and your privacy to the nth degree. And finally, number 10, don't click on links or attachments from unsolicited emails or texts. And I think this kind of goes without saying, but if you're getting phishing emails like, hey, like, you know, click here for this, that's oftentimes going to take you to a site that's going to download what's called a payload or an infection into your computer. And the other thing that I would worry about, let's say this is number 11 bonus, would be opening up pictures through things like Messenger. There's always been scams that have been going around the last couple of years of somebody sending a relatively blurry picture and saying, hey, like, I, you know, they hijack a friend's social media account, then send you a picture that's kind of blurry and say, hey, I found this picture of us. Is this you? And then you click on it to open it, to look at it, to see if it actually is you. And then that downloads an infection into your computer. So please make sure you are safe. But those are your 10 plus 1 tips on mobile phone security. And that is your tip of the week. And now let's take some questions from the audience. And if you would like your question read on air, you can find me at Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP, as I know I've mentioned before. And also you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. And I am more than happy to give you a shout out and answer anything about cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology that is on your mind. So with that, let's begin. Joseph from Benton Harbor, Michigan wants to know, is it possible to completely fall off the grid? And Joseph, thank you very much for this question. Short answer is mostly, I would say. I mean, unless we're living in a one-room shack in Montana writing manifestos, you know, and having no connection whatsoever, odds are there's going to be records of you in some way, shape, or form. But what we can do is we can ramp up privacy in what we do. So if I'm looking at your online life, let's say at your house, we make sure that you're using private wireless in your house with good, strong passwords so nobody can get into it. We're making sure that your web browsers, if you want to drop off the grid, are set into private mode, so they don't actually record anything on your computer, although that doesn't stop your internet service providers and possibly Google from tracking where you're going. So you can run things like a VPN, which will mask your connection and encrypt your data through your internet service provider, so they can't see what you're doing. You can also use web browsers, like Komodo's got one, Epic Private Browsing is another one, and on and on and on, that basically have no trackers, they have no logins. And what a lot of people don't know is that, you know, when they're connecting to Chrome or Mozilla, they're usually signing into like their Google account and all of that, which means Google is tracking everything you do. And so if you're just using a VPN, while your internet service provider may not know what you're doing, Google is going to know what you're doing because you're using Google Chrome logged in as yourself. And so that's an issue. And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time. And I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.